All right, so today we're going to really dig into a case that's really important, I think, for anybody who's either practicing or studying securities law.
Right.
And that's Dirks v. SEC.
Yes.
And, you know, insider trading, huge, huge area of law. And this 1983 case, Dirks, is sort of a cornerstone of that, particularly when it comes to TIPI liability.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, you know, we're talking about a guy who uncovered massive fraud, blew the whistle,
right,
helped bring down the scheme, and then gets censured by the SEC.
Yes, quite a story.
Yeah, so not quite the outcome you'd expect.
No, not at all. And it really, you know, even all these years later, still sparks debate, you know, about how do we balance encouraging people to come forward and blow the whistle on corporate wrongdoing versus, you know, are they profiting unfairly from this information?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So to help us kind of break this down, we have a true expert in securities law with us today.
Well, I'll do my best.
So let's just start with the basics.
Right.
You know, who is Dirks and what exactly did he do that got him in trouble with the SEC?
Sure. So the story centers on Raymond Dirks, who was a Wall Street analyst.
Okay.
And he specialized in insurance companies.
Got it.
And he got a tip from Ronald Sechrist, who was a former executive at Equity Funding of America.
Yeah.
And Sechrist was alleging that there was some, you know, really shady accounting practices going on.
Like what kind of, give us an example.
Well, we're talking about essentially cooking the books.
Okay.
You know, inflating the assets of the company. Mm. Just a classic case of fraud.
Okay, so Dirks gets this tip.
Right.
About this potential fraud. I mean, any responsible analyst would look into that, right?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what Dirks did.
Okay.
He talked to current and former employees.
Mm.
He dug into the financial statements, and he confirmed that, yeah, Equity Funding was engaged in massive fraud.
Wow.
He even went to the authorities, and this is amazing. They didn't believe him at first. Can you imagine? You have proof of this huge fraud, and you're hitting a wall.
That's incredible.
I know.
So what did he do? I mean, he can't just sit on this information knowing that investors could be at risk.
Well, he did what he felt was right, and he alerted his clients.
Okay.
And some of them, obviously, were concerned and sold their equity funding stock.
Makes sense.
And eventually, the SEC did launch an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
The fraud came to light, and the company collapsed.
So you would think Dirks would be hailed as a hero.
Right.
Right. I mean, he exposed this massive scheme.
Right.
Potentially saved investors millions, maybe even billions of dollars.
You would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But that's where the story takes a turn.
Yeah. So why was the SEC coming after him?
Well, the SEC's position at the time was that, you know, if you disclose material non-public information to anyone who might trade on it, even to expose wrongdoing, that could violate insider trading rules.
So even if you're trying to do the right thing.
Right. And they argued that Dirks, by sharing this information with his clients, who then traded on it, had aided and abetted insider trading.
I mean, I get that insider trading rules are meant to protect, you know, the fairness of the market.
Of course.
But it seems like they're saying that even uncovering a crime isn't a good enough defense.
Yeah, it gets pretty tricky.
Yeah. So what was the big legal question that the Supreme Court ended up having to decide?
The real issue was, could a TIPI like Dirks be held liable for insider trading when the tipper, in this case Sechrist, didn't actually personally benefit from disclosing that information?
So the question is about motivation. Like, if Sechrist had been looking for a bribe or something,
right,
or trying to manipulate the stock price, that'd be a clear violation, right?
Right.
But his goal was to expose the fraud. So
yeah,
how do we draw the line legally? What happened in the lower courts?
Well, both the administrative law judge and the Court of Appeals sided with the SEC. Yeah, they found Dirks culpable, so it went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
To the Supreme Court. All right, so big time.
Big time.
How did they analyze this?
This case is so important, the Dirks decision, because it really shaped how we understand insider trading law, and they laid out, you know, a framework for TIPI liability that rests on a few key principles.
Break those down for us.
Okay, so first, they focused on this idea of fiduciary duty.
Okay.
And they made it clear that only insiders, or those who inherit a fiduciary duty from an insider, owe a duty to the shareholders.
Got it.
Not to trade on material non-public information.
So like a special responsibility.
Exactly. To act in the best interest of the company and its shareholders.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a point in Dirks' favor. He wasn't an insider at Equity Funding.
Right.
So he wasn't directly bound by that obligation.
Right, but that doesn't mean he's off the hook completely.
Okay, so what's the next piece?
So the next part, and probably the most important part, is what's known as the personal benefit requirement.
Personal benefit, all right.
And for an insider to breach their fiduciary duty, they have to gain something personally.
Okay.
From tipping someone off.
So like money.
Yeah, it could be cold, hard cash, of course, but it could also be something less obvious, like a career advancement or a gift or even just protecting their reputation.
Interesting. Okay.
And in this case, the court concluded that Sechrist,
right,
the insider, didn't receive any such benefit.
So his goal was just to expose the fraud.
Exactly. That was his sole motive.
Okay, but how does that connect back to what Dirks did?
So this is where it all comes together with Tippy liability.
Okay.
The court said that Dirks didn't inherit that fiduciary duty from Sechrist just because he got the information.
Okay.
Because Sechrist hadn't breached his duty in the first place.
Oh, I see.
It's like a chain reaction. If the first domino doesn't fall,
the rest don't fall.
Exactly.
Okay, so since Sechrist was acting in good faith, not for personal gain, Dirks couldn't be held liable for sharing that information, even if his clients then traded on it.
Precisely. The Supreme Court really emphasized that the initial disclosure has to be improper for the tippy to be liable.
Okay, got it.
But there's another interesting aspect of their reasoning.
Okay, tell me more.
They went beyond just Dirks' actions and talked about the important role that analysts play in making sure markets work efficiently.
Okay.
And they said, if you punish analysts for uncovering and sharing information about fraud,
right,
even if it leads to trading, that could discourage them from doing their jobs.
And that would hurt everyone in the long run.
Exactly. It could reduce transparency and allow more companies to get away with fraud.
That's a great point.
So it's about finding the right balance.
Right. Deterring insider trading.
Yeah.
But also encouraging people to expose wrongdoing.
Exactly.
So how do we actually apply all of this to a real world situation?
That's where the Dirks test comes in.
Okay. The Dirks test.
And it's basically a two-part test to figure out if a tippy is liable.
All right, so give us part one.
Okay, so first, did the insider breach their fiduciary duty and personally benefit from disclosing the information?
So in Dirk's case, Sechrist didn't personally benefit.
Right.
So that first part wasn't met.
Exactly.
And that's what ultimately saved him.
Yes.
Okay, so what's the second part?
The second part is, did the tippy know or should they have known about the breach?
Okay, so two key questions.
Yes.
Insider benefit and tippy knowledge.
Exactly.
Okay, so in Dirk's case, because that first part wasn't met,
right,
he was in the clear.
He was in the clear.
But it sounds like applying this test isn't always so straightforward, right?
Yeah, you're right. It can get complicated.
Especially with that personal benefit part.
Yeah, figuring out if an insider truly benefited.
Right. Okay, so I definitely want to get into some of those nuances. But before we do,
sure,
let's talk about the dissenting opinion in Dirk's.
Okay.
Because I think that's where things get even more interesting.
It really does add another layer to the whole discussion.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into that dissenting opinion. Who disagreed with the majority and what were their concerns?
Well, it was Justice Blackmun who wrote the main dissent, and his argument really focused on the harm that's done to shareholders,
okay,
regardless of what the insider's motivation was.
So it's not just about whether the insider gets a direct bribe or something.
Right.
It's about making sure everyone in the market is on a level playing field. Is that what he's saying?
Exactly. He was really concerned that even if the information comes from someone who's trying to expose wrongdoing,
right,
allowing trading based on that non-public information still undermines fairness in the market.
Yeah, yeah.
He was arguing that everyone should have equal access to information, or at least not be disadvantaged because someone else has this inside scoop.
I see. So Blackmun is kind of coming at it from like a shareholder protection angle.
Yes, absolutely.
And the majority is maybe more focused on, like we said, trying to balance deterring insider trading with encouraging whistleblowing.
Exactly.
It's fascinating. I'm really starting to see how Dirks touches on this core tension in insider trading law.
It really does.
How do we balance transparency and encourage people to do the right thing?
Right.
While also protecting investors from practices that are unfair.
Yeah. And Dirks brought that tension into the spotlight. And it's a debate that continues to this day.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, later cases have grappled with this personal benefit requirement.
Yeah.
How to define it in situations that are much more complex.
Are there any examples of how later cases have built on Dirks?
Yeah. Definitely.
Especially in light of Blackmun's concerns.
Well, two cases that come to mind are U.S. v. Salmon in 2016.
Okay.
And U.S. v. Newman in 2014.
Okay.
So Salmon was really interesting because it involved insider trading between relatives.
Okay.
And the benefit to the insider in that case wasn't financial.
Yeah.
It was more like they were giving a gift of information. So that raises the question, can a gift be seen as a personal benefit?
Right, right.
And if so, does that make the tipper liable?
Interesting.
And then Newman dealt with a tippy situation that was more remote.
Okay.
And the court in that case raised the bar for proving that the tippy actually knew mm-hmm. about the insider's breach of duty.
So they had to show that the tippy was like actively aware
exactly.
that something shady was going on.
Yeah, not just that they benefited from the information.
Right, right.
They had to know that it was wrong.
Got it, got it.
So, you know, these later cases are really trying to refine those lines that were drawn by Dirks and tackle those nuances of personal benefit
yeah.
and how much a tippy needs to know to be held liable.
Okay, but you know, it seems like these days with social media, and instant communication and everything, things must be so much more complicated.
It adds a whole new layer of complexity.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Information spreads online like wildfire.
Yep.
It's so much easier for a tip to make its way to people who might trade on it,
right.
even if they're really far removed from the original source.
And it's going to be hard to track all of that.
It can be incredibly difficult.
To figure out who knew what and when.
Exactly, and to trace that chain of information.
Yeah, it's amazing how, even though Dirks is from 1983,
right.
it still feels so relevant to understanding the legal and ethical issues surrounding insider trading today, particularly in our digital age.
Yeah, it really laid the groundwork for tippy liability.
Okay.
It created this framework that we still use today,
mm-hmm.
even as courts continue to refine it and interpret it.
So it's like a foundation that later cases keep building on.
Exactly, trying to keep pace with this changing landscape of yeah. information and trading.
So if our listener is trying to wrap their head around all of this,
yeah.
what would you say is like the biggest takeaway from Dirks and its legacy?
The main takeaway is that just because someone is a tippy
okay.
doesn't automatically mean they're liable. Okay.
It really depends on the insider's motives
mm-hmm.
and what the tippy knew or should have known about those motives.
So if an insider is acting out of self-interest, like that's a huge red flag.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
But if they're trying to expose wrongdoing, like Sechrist in the Dirks case,
right.
it's a lot less clear cut.
It gets much murkier.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just about the information itself.
Right.
It's about the context in which it's shared.
The context. Okay.
Yeah.
So are there any like practical tips that you would give to our listener?
Sure.
Especially if they're trying to analyze a potential insider trading situation.
Well, always start with the Dirks test.
Okay.
Ask yourself, did the insider gain anything personally?
Okay.
And did the tippy know, or should they have known, about that potential benefit?
So really think about those two key questions.
Yes, and considering those carefully can help untangle some of the complexities of the situation.
It's almost like following the money trail, or at least the trail of personal gain, right?
Exactly, follow the incentives.
Yeah.
Be wary of information that seems too good to be true.
Absolutely, especially if it's not public knowledge.
It seems like good advice, not just for legal professionals, but for anyone who's involved in the financial markets.
For sure. And Dirks is a great reminder that insider trading law is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
So staying up to date on new cases and regulatory changes is crucial.
Okay. So it's a complex area of law.
Very complex.
But hopefully our listeners are feeling a bit more confident now about their understanding of Dirks v. SEC.
I hope so.
And why it's still so important today.
Yeah, it's a fascinating case.
Yeah, definitely a lot of depth and nuance there.
It really is, and it raises questions that go beyond just the law.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Yeah, it makes you think about the ethics of information, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Market fairness, the responsibilities of people who have access to this kind of non-public information.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not just about, you know, did they break this specific rule or not?
Right.
It's about the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Speaking of thought-provoking questions, you got a final one for our listeners to kind of ponder as we wrap up today.
Sure. So this is one that comes up a lot.
Okay.
Could Dirks actually make corporate fraud more likely?
Hmm. How so?
Well, by making it tougher to go after some kinds of insider trading, did the court maybe unintentionally make it easier for companies to get away with bad behavior?
So in trying to protect analysts and whistleblowers,
yeah.
are we kind of giving a free pass to some of the bad actors out there.
It's possible. And some people argue that, you know, by focusing so much on the insider's intent and what the tippy knew, we might miss some of the more subtle ways that people are using insider information.
Right, right.
It's like they're finding ways to sort of disguise their personal benefit or manipulate how that information is flowing.
Yeah, so even with the Dirks test, it's still a bit of a cat and mouse game.
It is.
Between the regulators and the people who are trying to game the system. Yeah, it's really interesting to think about how Blackman's concerns about you know, protecting shareholder interests might be playing out in ways that even he didn't anticipate back then.
That's a really good point, and it highlights how tough it is to create laws that keep up with all the new ways that things are happening.
Especially in the financial world.
Let's raise in finance here.
Constantly evolving.
Constantly.
So it seems like the Dirks decision, you know, while it was groundbreaking at the time, it's also opened up this whole Pandora's box of new questions and challenges.
It has, for lawmakers, for the courts.
Yeah, for everybody involved.
Yeah.
So I think our listeners are probably feeling a little overwhelmed at this point. But hopefully also, like, they have a much better understanding.
I hope so.
Of Dirks v. SEC and why it's so important, even today.
Yeah, it's more than just a case. It's like a lens to look at how we're constantly trying to balance all these competing interests.
Right, exactly.
In the markets.
In the markets. Before we wrap up, is there one sort of final piece of advice or a golden rule that you would give our listeners?
Yeah, I would say insider trading law isn't just about memorizing rules.
Okay.
It's about context, judgment, thinking about ethics. So whenever you see a situation where there might be non-public information involved, go back to those just test questions. Did the insider benefit? Did the tippy know?
Right.
But also think bigger. What are the consequences of your actions? Are you keeping things fair?
Yeah.
Are you acting ethically?
Are you upholding the integrity of the market?
Exactly. And those questions don't always have easy answers.
No.
But at least asking them is a good first step.
That's such great advice. It's a reminder that legal expertise isn't just about knowing the rules.
Right.
It's about using good judgment. It's about ethical reasoning.
Exactly.
And Dirks is a great case study for how to do that.
I agree.
Well, that brings us to the end of another deep dive.
Well, that went fast.
It did.
It always does.
Today, we really went deep on Dirks v. SEC, this case that continues to be so important for understanding insider trading.
It's amazing how relevant it is.
We talked about why the Supreme Court decided the way they did, unpacked that Dirks test, talked about the dissent.
Yeah, Blackman's concerns.
And then got into how later cases have built on Dirks.
It's fascinating how it keeps evolving.
It really is a fascinating case.
It is.
I hope you all learned something new today. I know I did.
I always do.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp. And remember, knowledge is power, especially in this world of securities law.
Words to live by.
See you next time.